Hey everyone, I'm Megan Teets, and this is Extra Awesome, a series of bonus episodes from Sorta Awesome designed to bring even more awesome into your life. Last June, my friend and Enneagram enthusiast Lee Kramer came on Sorta Awesome as a guest co-host for episode 12 of the show. Since that time, we've had lots of questions and discussion about the Enneagram in our community. I invited Lee to come back to the show to tackle a few of your questions about the Enneagram approach to understanding personality types. Today, we'll be talking about what the arrows indicate for each type, what to do when we can't seem to figure out our Enneagram types, and what it means if you find yourself drawn to certain types more than others. All of that coming up on this episode of Extra Awesome. Hello, Awesomes! Well, it has been almost a year since my dear friend Lee Kramer came on Sorta Awesome to talk about the Enneagram. Now, that was back in episode 12 of the show. And since that episode aired, we have had tons of great follow-up discussion about this ancient system of understanding people and their personalities. So, Lee, welcome back to Sorta Awesome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. I'm happy that people want to talk more about the Enneagram.
Yes, I would love to talk to you about this anytime. And so we have some really great specific questions about the Enneagram from the awesome community that we're going to get to in just a moment. But for anybody who has not listened to episode 12 of the show, who has never really heard of the Enneagram system, what would you say is sort of the best overview of the Enneagram system for somebody who is not familiar with how all of this works?
So the Enneagram is the study of the 9 basic types of people, explains why we behave the way that we do, and it provides a pathway for individual growth. So people may be familiar with the symbol, which is a circle connecting the 9 types. The goal of the Enneagram is that as we grow, we'll embody more of our type's positive qualities and less of the negative qualities, and we'll be able to move around the circle and be our best selves.
That's right. Yes, that's one thing that I love so much about the Enneagram. And I mentioned this on episode 12 when Lee and I first kind of broke down the system and talked about all of the different aspects of Enneagram, is that the Enneagram is so geared towards understanding ourselves in a way that propels us into healthiness, into really good personal growth. Whereas Myers-Briggs, which I love and talk about all the time, is much more about just understanding how you interact with the world around you. There is not that heavy emphasis on personal growth that we find in the Enneagram. So, Lee, you know that we asked in the awesome community, in the Hangout group, for some questions about the Enneagram that we could tackle on today's episode of Extra Awesome. Now, we had a ton of questions about both wings and arrows. That seems to be something that comes up so often. Lee, I'm just so curious how often you get asked about this wings question. What are the wings and how do I figure out what my wing is?
Oh, I know you have some thoughts on this. Yeah. People get very confused about wings and arrows, and I understand it. It's a lot of information to take in. I always emphasize that you need to understand how your type actually works, how it plays out in the day-to-day before you start delving into the rest of the system.
Right. So step one really is to discover, explore the system to where you feel confident in what your actual type is before you even begin to worry about the wings part of the system. Okay.
Yes, for sure. So with wings, the best way to describe it is that the wings are the numbers that flank your type. So if you are a 4 like me, then your wings will be 3 and 5. So you, in order to be truly balanced, you take on the strengths of your wings. I am going to say something slightly sacrilegious in the Enneagram circles and say that wings are not that important.
Aha! You don't hear many people saying that in the Enneagram community, that's for sure.
Yes. So I think there is a value in knowing more about both of your wings. So I'm not saying don't learn anything about it, but that it's not as important as a lot of people say. So a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm a 3 wing 4. And they lead with that instead of saying I'm type 3. So knowing your wing, or knowing even which wing is more dominant, is just a way of pinpointing your personality a little more, kind of like your Myers-Briggs type.
Sure.
You know, but the whole point of wings is to take on the strengths of both. So being more dominant in one is actually showing you that you are a little unhealthy and that you need to have both in order to be balanced.
That is so interesting to me because, as you know, I'm a type 9 and I have really never been able to fully settle, am I a 9 wing 8 or a 9 wing 1, because I can see so much of myself in sort of both of those descriptions. So that actually makes me feel better, like maybe I'm a little more balanced than I thought I was.
Yes.
So for people who have questions about the wings aspect of the Enneagram, what we're going to do is this. Lee has volunteered her time and wisdom and knowledge to the awesome community, and she is going to share more in depth about the wings in this week's edition of the Sorta Awesome newsletter. Many, many, many of you are subscribers to the newsletter already, but if you have not subscribed, go to tinyletter.com/sortaawesome, sign up for the newsletter, because you're going to be hearing more about Lee on this topic of wings in this week's newsletter. Lee, thank you so much for taking the time to do that. We all appreciate it so much. Now, the other aspect of it that we got a lot of questions about is the arrows. What are the arrows in the Enneagram system? How do they work? And what is the point of that aspect of understanding who you are in your type?
I have to say, I love the arrows. This might be my most favorite part of how the Enneagram works. Once you know how your type functions, which includes the unhealthy tendencies, you can explore when you are being healthy or unhealthy and see how it manifests itself through your arrows. So besides wings, each type is connected to two other types via the arrows. When you are healthy and balanced, you move toward your arrow of integration. And you take on the positive quality of that type. And it goes in a very specific order, which I will try to say in a slow manner.
Okay.
So one moves towards 7, 5, 8, 2, 4, 1. And then there is 3, 6, 9, 3.
Okay.
Then you have the reverse direction, which would be your arrow of disintegration. And that shows how you respond when you're stressed or unbalanced. So this is what happens when your usual way of dealing with stress doesn't work anymore. So you then take on the unhealthy quality of that type. So this would go from 1 to 4, 2, 8, 5, 7, 1, and then 3, 9, 6, 3. And then I can give a more specific example so we can see how this plays out with type 8.
Yes. Yeah. Type 8. Okay. So how would arrows work for a type 8?
We're gonna start with the positive. Eight's moving toward type 2 when they're healthy. So moving toward type 2 is the arrow of integration. So from the 2, 8's learn how to open their hearts and reconnect with how much they care about people. Now, if people remember 8's, if they know any 8's, they may think of really powerful, dominant, strong personalities. They can become very aggressive. They really don't want anyone else to control them. So they kind of are from a different, more aggressive stance. And I'm kind of laughing because I know what some people call 8's, and we won't say that here, but we can all think it.
Okay.
Although I love my 8 friends. So
yes.
It's not,
we need our 8's in the world for sure. We need their passion and their fire for sure.
Yeah.
So when an 8's healthy, then that means they're moving towards 2. They don't become 2's. Right, but their arrow's moving that way. So they're taking those sort of like maybe nurturing, people loving qualities from the 2 and incorporating that into their actions and the way they're seeing the world. Is that right?
Absolutely. So yes, we see them becoming more nurturing and caring, especially with children and pets. It's really common to see 8's who are just wonderful with kids. You see this really soft side of their personality come out. And sometimes it's almost surprising when you think of how they can interact with other people. It's really beautiful when you can see that. So when an 8 is integrating toward type 2, they're letting go of their usual defenses and they're trusting in something beyond their own power. So it's not just that they're taking on those positive qualities, but there's this sense of relinquishing, that they don't have to approach the world in such a dominant, controlling way. They can trust in the relationships that they have and in themselves, and that they don't have to respond to the world the way that they usually do.
Okay, I love that.
It's a huge sign of health to be able to recognize that and to see that you actually become more effective in realizing that the boundaries and limitations that are in place are actually helping them nurture themselves and accept vulnerability in their lives You might see the health and sense of well-being improve. They're still working hard, but they're also making a space for practicing self-care. And then they actually end up becoming even better leaders than they already are because they have that better relationship with the people around them.
So that's eight, moving in the direction of integration. Now, when an eight gets stressed, when they're moving in unhealthy or disintegration ways, what number do they move towards and what does that look like for an eight?
They disintegrate toward type five. So when eights feel overwhelmed, they've taken on more than they can handle, they will retreat from conflicts, which is definitely not their normal MO, very opposite. So they will retreat in order to strategize, buy time, gather strength. They might become more solitary. They will insist on having time, space, and privacy to figure things out before they can jump back into action, which on the surface may seem healthy, but it's really not, because once an eight starts retreating, it snowballs on itself and they will become overly preoccupied with projects and problems. They can become hermit-like, which is definitely a quality of very unhealthy fives, and they're only focusing on the task at hand. They might neglect to eat, sleep, interact with other people. They can become more high-strung like average fives. They can also become very cynical and then even contemptuous of beliefs and values that they don't hold. Okay. So we see a lot of these unhealthy behaviors manifesting themselves.
Right. Well, I love that practical application for type A. And every single type has arrows of integration and disintegration. Mm-hmm. And if you go to a resource like the Enneagram Institute or an Enneagram book, you can find out more information about your specific type, what directions you're moving as you're moving in healthy ways, and how you're moving in unhealthy patterns. So that's really a great overview of how arrows work. So Lee, I wanted to take some of these questions from the Hangout community and kind of toss them at you and see what you might have to share with some of our awesomes who had these great questions for us. So for example, Lori in the Hangout group said, I am a one, which remind us of what the one type is known as.
The ones tend to be known as the teachers, or sometimes they are called the perfectionists.
Okay. All right. So Lori's mm-hmm. a one, and she says, I would love some tips to file away to move toward growth. Again, like I said, this is the beauty of the Enneagram, is it propels us towards growth. So she said, when I'm feeling too stuck in my ways, I tell myself, be a seven. But I wonder if there are specific things to focus on for a one relating to growth. What would you have to say for Lori?
Well, first I had to laugh because this is such a one kind of question. It's very, very typical. I mean, ones want to be perfect. And so they will often approach any personality system with the intent of being the best or the best, whatever their type is. Uh-huh. So there's that part of it. But yes, there's definitely a lot of practical things that ones can do. And one thing that I always tell my type one friends is that they need to recognize and make peace with their inner judge, which is also known as their superego. Okay. So the one's prevailing superego message is you are good or okay if you do what is right.
Uh-huh, yes.
And this plays out in very critical ways in their head. So that inner judge is always, always talking, the inner critic, like just nitpicking every single thought, action, what they've said. Some people are more self-critical, other people are more critical of others. There's a whole continuum. So making peace with that inner judge, or just recognizing it at first and seeing how it affects their sense of well-being and how they connect with their environment. Super, super important. Ones are strivers, partially because they have such distinct opinions on the best way to do something. It's really hard for them to relinquish control and let others help, but that is makes it all the more important for them to let other people help them. Even if they do things differently, it may not be up to your standards, but you can still learn something from that. Even if it's just noticing how you feel when someone is doing something that isn't the way that you think that it should be done, there's still a chance to grow and to learn from that. And it maybe it's not the way you do it, but maybe it would help you consider it differently, and maybe it would actually be better, which sounds a little crazy on the surface. I know I can hear all the ones being like, what? Not possible. Right. But you never know. And it also helps ones practice focusing on the positive in what others do. A compliment from a one goes a long, long, long way, especially yes. because people are more used to their criticism. I mean, I have a dear loved one in my life, and when they offer me a compliment, I feel like I'm flying. Because it just kind of comes out of nowhere. And I'm like, really? Oh, okay. It must be true. Like, if you're saying it. And then she mentioned, you know, what can she learn from type 7? So ones integrate toward type 7. The healthy 7 helps the one learn to be more spontaneous. They can relax their guard and feel comfortable with whatever situation they're in. Sevens also teach ones to be more curious, more optimistic, and more interested in learning, especially from other people. So ones who are integrating to 7 are more able to relate to others' perspectives and recognize how much depth this adds to their own views. So with that, you can see how it kind of correlates and pairs with how a 1 can grow. But then there are those specific things that 7s have to offer. 7s are more spontaneous and joyful, optimistic people. Now, they have their weaknesses as well.
Sure,
so that's
yes.
It goes back to you integrate toward the positives of that type. But
and for a 1, it's not about being a 7. Like she kind of, her self-talk is like, hey, be a 7. It's not about actually trying to emulate and try to act as if you were a 7. It's taking those positive things and incorporating it.
Yeah, recognizing when that happens, recognizing when they are more curious and they're more optimistic and they're more interested in learning from other people, to be like, oh, like I can see that the 7 is playing out. Like right now in this moment, I'm healthy and balanced because these things are manifesting themselves in my life.
Exactly. Yes, that's so great. And for all of the types, again, any Enneagram resource is going to have specific ways that are specific characteristics of each type in their healthiest states. I know sometimes I go back and look at Enneagram Institute. Again, it's free. You can look at it quickly anytime you need to. And I look at the healthy levels for type 9 for myself. And I think, in what ways am I reflecting this? And in what ways can I grow towards this?
So. Yes. And keeping those ideas in mind, like that's part of seeing your type play out in the day-to-day of being like, oh, today I'm in the average levels.
Yes.
Now at these moments, like, whoa, I handle this a little differently. I can see more health and strength playing out in my life today.
Exactly.
And kind of just trying to moment by moment choose, you know, a different, healthier way of responding, the way, you know, different from how we normally do, which is we get used to those patterns and behaviors, and it takes time to adopt new or healthier ways of coping with life.
That's what's so great about Enneagram is it kind of tells you specifically, like it's not one size fits all. It looks at how your brain and heart and soul are wired to work and saying, here's what healthy looks like for you.
Yeah.
So I love that. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's move on, because another very frequently asked question that I see people struggle with is when they're stuck between 2 or maybe even sometimes 3 types trying to decide, what type am I? In fact, Lee, when you did the flashcards sort of test with me, the flashcards way of figuring out a type, I was an exact even split between 7 and 9. And through talking with you, landed on, okay, I actually really fully am a 9. So we have a couple of questions about that I wanted to go over really quickly. For example, Tara said, I would love it if Lee could talk about being stuck between 2 types. I'm stuck between a 4 and a 5. I could make an argument for both. She says, I know Lee struggled with deciding if she was a 2 or 4, so maybe she could talk a bit about how she landed on 4. And then Nicole had a similar question. She said that she had listened to episode 12 with you, Lee, and that she did some digging into it. She took a test. She scored almost identically in 3 different types. So what would your advice be when it's time to sort of narrow down and figure out, what type am I actually? Because I think this is a pretty common thing.
Yes.
That when you start to look at the profiles, maybe you take a test, you can see yourself in a couple of different types. It's not always glaringly obvious.
Right. And I would hope, especially the older you are, once you start exploring the Enneagram, that at least a few types would resonate with you, because I think that speaks to being healthier and more self-aware and how interconnected the types are. Like there should be parts of almost every type that should that you should relate to on some level, but there will be only one type that is your core type that you operate out of. And figuring that out really comes down to thinking about what's most true of you most of the time. Which is the question I would ask my clients when I was still coaching. Like, yes, maybe you see this play out sometimes, and yes, maybe this quality sometimes, but on a day-to-day basis, what is really happening? What is most true? And then also looking at the core struggles of each type is important. The core struggles and the desires. So if you look at those, I think that can be really clarifying I know for me, I read a book. I read Richard Rohr's The Enneagram, and that's where I was first trying to figure out my type. And I was landing between type 2, 4, and 9. And I eliminated 9 pretty early on. And then I was trying to go between type 2 and type 4. I was still a social worker at the time, so type 2, the helper, seemed to make sense. Also, women are socialized to be 2s, so there was a lot of stuff that was like, yeah, I can see that in me. But when I looked at the core struggle, for the 2, it's pride. For the 4, it's envy. And when I really thought about it, and I really thought about my orientation to the world, I was like, I'm actually, like, I don't need to be needed like a 2. Like, I've always had really good boundaries. I don't insert myself into people's problems. That's just not my MO. I'm not seeking those things out. But when I looked at the 4 and I thought about envy and comparison, and I thought about how 4s will retreat, they can be very moody. They're one of the, like, the driving desires is to have personal significance and to think that people wouldn't notice my uniqueness or how special I am, or that they wouldn't want to make time for me, or to feel invisible. Like, that is my, one of my biggest fears. And it's like, oh, I'm pretty clearly a 4. But it takes a lot of self-awareness, and it takes some time to consider, you know, what is really true of you. I would never, before figuring all this out, I wouldn't have said, like, yes, envy and comparison is at the root of my problems. I wouldn't have thought about that. But once I identify my type, I was like, oh, yeah, I can see that thread throughout my life. Sure. Like, it's very much there. So it's given me a language for my behaviors and motivations that I didn't have before.
And I think one of the biggest takeaways I've learned from you in just our conversations about it is it sometimes is a little bit more of a process to discover what your true core type is.
I think that's because of how complex our motivations are.
Sure,
like,
yes.
How often can you look at yourself and be like, oh, I'm behaving this way because I'm really motivated by this fear?
Right, right, yes. Not many of us are aware of that on a conscious level. Most of us probably aren't.
Right. Yeah, looking at how those three, like looking at the 2 or 3 types and see how they play out day to day for a while. Either one will rise to the top or none will, and then you'll just go back to the drawing board.
That is such great advice. Well, we have one more question from someone in the Hangout group. Catherine asked about when you are drawn to certain types. So she's a type 9, like I am, and she said, after reading through all the descriptions and having some of my people take the quick assessment for the Enneagram, I found out that my dad, my husband, and my best friend are all 6s. Is it common for certain types to link up, or is this just a weird coincidence? I would love to hear your thoughts on this, because I feel like my friends are, I have everyone in the Enneagram represented in my life. I don't know that I have any one type represented more than others, but I would love to hear your thoughts on this, Lee.
Yes, I love this question. This is a really fun one to answer, and one that I don't know that anyone has ever asked me. So
yeah.
It's really great. This is more anecdotal, but it's really common for spouses to marry their wing types.
Oh, interesting.
You complement each other. And I think the same is true for arrows. So 9s and 6s are connected by arrows. 6s move toward type 9 when they're integrating. 9s disintegrate toward type 6. And so you already have some common things. I guess it's easier maybe for 6s to move toward type 9 or to befriend a 9 because they want to emulate some of those qualities. And maybe the 9 will see things in the 6s that they'll be like, steer away from. But there's still a lot that you can learn from each other. And I think that is a really natural gravitation. I know in my life, my dad is a 1 and my mom is a 2. And those are my arrows. So I integrate toward type 1 as a 4, and I disintegrate toward type 2. So it's been really interesting to see, like, how I am like literally a product of my parents.
Right. Yes.
So I think we do see those little patterns here and there. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And I don't think it's a weird coincidence. I just think it's a really really neat thing to see play out. And yeah, just so much we can learn from each other.
Definitely. There is, whether it is in romantic relationships, friendships, family dynamics. Oh my goodness. Does the Enneagram unlock so much about family dynamics? It's been truly helpful in my life in so many ways. So I know that people are going to have some follow-up questions for you, Lee, or maybe just want to continue the conversation a little bit more on social media. So if you could just remind us really quickly where we can find you all around the web.
Sure. My blog is leekramer.com. I'm on Twitter at hopefully, L-E-I-G-H. And those are probably the best ways to reach me.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing some more Enneagram wisdom with us. I have a feeling this won't be your last time coming on the show to talk Enneagram, because there are always more questions for you and for your wisdom about this topic and your passion for this topic as well. So thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you all back next time. Thanks for listening to Extra Awesome. Show notes for this and every episode are available at sortaawesomeshow.com. Don't forget you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at sortaawesomemeg, and you can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/sortaawesome. Until next time, stay awesome, my friends.